We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 13 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates fierce and formidable women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
And I'm Frances Gibson. And welcome to today's Community of Caring. We are here today with another extraordinary woman impacting the field of education. And Margot Day is our guest. And Keisha, I know you are incredibly excited about introducing Margot to our community. So let's learn a little bit more about her.
That's right, Frances. I have admired her work for years, probably even decades. And I would love nothing more than just spend a week with her and just soak in everything that she has to teach me. You know, Margot retired from Microsoft after 17 years in a senior level sales leadership position. I got to know her when she was vice president of US education, leading teams to bring digital learning into classrooms. She was really key in helping me in Metro Nashville transform how we thought about using technology to improve our schools. And it actually helped us come off of a school improvement list. She now spends most of her time advocating for girls in Kenya and raising funds to do that work. She first visited World's Vision work in Kenya in 2009, and she's gonna talk a little bit more about that, but that became, I believe, a pivotal moment in her life. And she is now on World Vision's National Leadership Council. She's on board of directors for Global Give Back Circle. She's really engaged still in technology. So she might call it retirement, but she's probably not as retired as most retirees are. She loves to backpack. She goes outside. She likes everything outside, along with a great glass of wine. So I'm super happy to have my dear friend with us today, to share her story and her journey and her encouraging words to our audience.
Well, Keisha, make sure you take me along for that week, if not longer, because I like everything that I heard. And you know, Margot, each week we ask our guests what we like to call our pattern of M's, and how fitting that your name starts with an M too. So we'll just continue with the pattern with our guests as well. And so this pattern of M's, we like to ask questions, things like, you know, what do you see in the mirror? In other words, reflections of yourself, and who are your role models, and some insights into the mentors that have impacted your life, and looking at movements, and, you know, what should we be predicting when it comes to watching some maverick moments that you're paying attention to? Mm-hmm.
And we also like to catch up on any edubabble phrasing that we use to make sure our listeners understand. I referenced a little bit your work in Kenya and how significant that was. Can you just kind of talk about some of that work and the purpose behind it?
Well, yeah, thank you, Keisha, and thank you, Frances, and thank you, everyone. It really is an honor to be able to speak with you all today. I'm honored to be on the honored roll, I'll say that. And so this work in Kenya is really quite profound, because there are tribes in the country of Kenya that still practice forced marriage of girls when they're 12 or 13 years old. And in some of the tribes, they take it a step further ritualistically, where they perform female genital mutilation on these children, and it is a prerequisite to marriage. And the marriage is an arranged marriage, and usually a young girl will be betrothed, or what they might call booked, by the age of 8, 9, or 10 years old. And from that point in time, their future is just cast. And so in 2009, I went to Kenya because I really was trying to discover for myself, what do I do in the second half of my life to really make an impact and make a difference? And I partnered with World Vision on this trip, and we saw a whole lot of other, a lot of things and work that World Vision does. But they took me to a rescue center for girls. And that's where I met 34 kids, young girls, ages 8 to up to 13, 14 years old, who had run away, many the evening before they were going to undergo this cutting ceremony, because they didn't want to be cut nor married off when they were 12 or 13 years old. And the one thing they asked of me that day when I met them and we talked was, can you support our future through education? And I just realized right then and there a couple of things. One was, when I was 8 or 9 years old, I would have never had the courage to go against my family wishes, my culture, and do what these girls had done. They were the bravest, most courageous kids I had ever met. And then it was the whole equalizing experience for me, where I just realized I had no choice in the family that I was born into, in the country that I was born into. And so here I am. And fortunately, I had a great family, and they supported me and my education, all this stuff. Here I am, this woman of means and resource, and I'm looking at these kids and I'm like, I do not deserve to be on the same ground as these children. What can I do to lean in and help? And so that's how this whole now work that's kind of defined a lot of the second half of my life started, really focusing on how do we come together and work together with communities to think through a different future for their children that doesn't involve the brutality of the cut, doesn't involve marrying their child when they're 12 or 13 years old. So how do you accomplish that through education? And how do you accomplish that through then empowering different livelihoods so that the families themselves are not dependent on the dowry in exchange for their child's life? That's why I retired from Microsoft, so I could focus a ton of my time there.
That may be the most powerful defining explanation we have ever had when it comes to a phrase, a thought, or this part of our podcast. You know, your words are followed up by commitment and action. And the support through education is just so moving. I think, we all instantly have a deeper understanding of what that means and the struggle of Kenyan women and many women around the world and the struggles that they are enduring and the role of advocates like yourself. You know, it's probably the perfect time now to just start with that first M then. You know, who are your role models and why? Who helped journey you to this space?
So I would say my role models today I have lots of role models, because I believe that every person is beloved. Every person, I believe every person has potential. And I believe that we're in a society and a world that has all kinds of bias, where we're not including people, we're not really understanding this beauty of diversity. People aren't taking action on, you know, these existential threats that we have. And so when I think about who my role models are, I think about people who are really leaning in to help us all understand really what our biases are. People who are leaning in to show respect, kindness, compassion, reaching to the other at all times. You know, people who are leaning in and who at risk, maybe career risk or other risk, you know, are taking these hard stands about what we need to do and how we need to change. You know, if you're looking for like some names of people that I look at, like Deb Haaland, who's the new Interior Secretary, the first Native American woman we've ever had in a cabinet position, let alone an Interior Secretary. I think of the youth, like, you know, Greta Thun or Malala. You know, there's youth that are now speaking out and really helping us understand and make a change and a difference. There's people like Stacey Abrams who look at, you know, how important it is for everyone to have a voice in our American, you know, democracy, or people like Brian Stevens, you know, who Stevenson, who leaned in against the, you know, the African American people that are in prison unjustly. And so what do we need to do that? I look at business leaders. I came from Microsoft. I have immense just respect for Satya Nadella, Brad Smith, in my own line of reporting, Kate Johnson, business people who are really looking at corporate America and how do we really embrace and bring into the culture diverse opinions, inclusive behaviors, respect that goes into all that. So I'm inspired in a lot of places where I look. I get bummed out in some other places where I look, but I tend to want to live in the inspired spot.
Well, and I believe you do. And those are incredible role models that anybody should consider looking to. And, you know, since you, in my humble opinion, are a legend in the high-tech space, I know that you've mentored many women, including me. But can you share with us who your mentors have been and how that may have changed you over time, or how you have different mentors over time?
Yeah, and you do have different mentors over time. And the first person I actually want to highlight is my third grade teacher. Her name is Mrs. Belzvik. She's still alive, actually. She's in her 90s now. When I was 8 years old, I was very shy. I'm an introvert by nature. I love math and science. And so she saw in me, this shy, introverted little kid, something that she wanted to unlock. And she could tell that I if I was given the chance, I could develop confidence, you know, in myself. And so she actually asked me to perform the volcano experiment, which many teachers will know what that is, in front of the whole school. And it was Parents' Day, and to all of the parents. And so I went home and I was like, Mom, you know, and so my mom, you know, helped me kind of practice. And then I performed this experiment and had to speak in front of the entire school. I will tell you, when I think about her mentorship, it's about looking and finding the potential, really seeing people for who they are and finding that ultimate potential in people. And so I'd say my third grade teacher. The executive recruiter that actually brought me into Microsoft is a mentor today, because as I'm thinking about this project in Kenya and how do we really scale and expand so that many, many more women and children benefit from this project, not only does he have connections, but more importantly, he asks me these very insightful questions that cause me to really think about, why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I approaching it this certain way? And then because he's got a perspective that I don't have, he can ask me questions about and help me really think through how I might approach something differently. So those are two mentors, one from the past and one from the present that I have.
And I think we want you to be our mentor in the future. We're asking now.
I'm happy to help in any way I possibly can.
Well, you are definitely already a mentor to many of our listeners. And I think we're already living in that inspired space that you've talked about. And as we think about that inspired space, you've taken that into an investment into the lives of women worldwide. And when you look in the mirror and you think about the work that you've done as a leader, what do you see? Or when was that moment when you said, you know, Margo, you are a leader?
Well, the very first moment actually was as a little kid. I mean, I always knew, you know how it's just as a kid, like, you know, you have something. But you just don't know how to unlock your box that you're in. You know, you need someone to help you do that. And so what I saw was that I really felt like I had something I could contribute and I could give. I just didn't know how. And so that's one of the reasons why this experience I had with Mrs. Beleswick was so seminal, you know, for me. Then as I progressed through my career and life and everything else, empathy is so critically important for us all to be able to relate and to come together and actually do big things. And so I developed a mindset that said, I want to live in a value added kind of way, which meant that as I was talking with somebody else, I needed to understand what they were trying to accomplish or what they were all about, so that then I could figure out, do I have something of value that I can bring to them? And then that allows us to have then a conversation that really moves the ball forward. And so what I see today when I look in the mirror is still that I look in the mirror as somebody who's, I am so humbled by the people that I've had around me that have helped me through my life. And I've worked hard at what I've done, but and with the help of others. And so now I look at, I can be a leader that involves many, so that many can actually realize their potential too. And it's in that kind of purpose that makes life fantastic to live, when you can be involved in that kind of way.
Oh, my friend, and you are such a servant leader. You, you're so approachable. You're just, I don't know, this is a love fest for Margo, but you're just such a wonderful person. And the work that you've done, when you first told me you were retiring, of course, my heart broke. But, and then you said what you were going to be doing. And then I was like, how can I help raise money? Like, what do we need to do? Because what your vision is to help these young women is just incredible. And that work that you've done and you continue to do in Kenya, and that just the influence that you've had worldwide, because people look at what you're doing and they see possibility. They're like, well, if, you know, I can do that, mm-hmm. You know, honestly, that's one of the reasons that I wanted to create, you know, this podcast. Frances and I had a conversation and, you know, we were like, gosh, you know, women have to be uplifted, just like you have. I mean, that's your story every day of your life, is celebrating women and inclusion. So I'm wondering how do you think women are changing the world today?
Yeah. You know, that is such a great question. And, you know, this word community, when you tease it apart, it's common unity, right? Or you think about communion, it's kind of, it's common union. It's like we are coming together in a purpose-driven way to make a difference. And the thing that I celebrate is that women are recognizing that we can find that common unity, that community. We can find that purpose, and we're tuned that way in many respects. And so I see women banding together, not only to you know, help one another, but to actually change systems, change bias, make big differences in climate change or, you know, other kinds of breakthrough, because we understand what communion and community actually mean. And at our center, we always have this center of purpose, because we have this maternal instinct, right? That we want everybody to be uplifted and to be able to realize their full potential. And so, I mean, just take a look at the spectrum of things. You know, I mentioned Deb Holland. Take a look at, you know, these female engineers that we're celebrating now from NASA that we didn't even know about, you know, when the first moonshot happened, because nobody talked about the women before. You think about the coalition of women that are coming together now to solve issues of global poverty, or of food insecurity, or issues of climate change. I mean, when we come together and we have this kind of common purpose, and you bring that passion and that energy to it, really remarkable things happen.
Remarkable indeed. And as you think about changing systems in common union, I love that. I wrote that down for my grad students for tonight in class to unpack that even more. Who are some mavericks that we should be looking at? You know, those folks that are disturbing the system. Perhaps you're a fellow Shiro's out there with you. Who are you watching, and who should others be watching?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, gosh, I would say, first of all, let's watch one another. I mean, I think about, you know, Dr. Jill Biden. You know, just as she to me is a Shiro. Michelle Obama is a Shiro. There's a woman who's at the Boys and Girls Club of America. Her name is Meg Pittman, who is really all about how do you really bring and celebrate diversity and inclusion and have impact in educational programs in this after school kind of setting. She's an unbelievable woman. And I just think, you know, Stacey Abrams, I've mentioned before. Some of these names are political, but I'm kind of living in that world a little bit, you know, right now. I think a lot about like what Melinda Gates is talking about in this whole world of gender equality. And what does that really mean? And what does the world look like post-COVID pandemic? And what does it really mean? And how do we unlock this women's potential? And there's very practical things that she and the Gates Foundation, you know, are doing. And so those would be a few of the names that I'd mention that really are Shiros to me.
Well, they're Shiros to us too, by the way. And we're dreaming of getting a couple of those on this podcast, Dr. Biden and Michelle Obama. So, I mean, if you happen to be in a conversation with them, if you want to mention the Honor Roll podcast, you know,
I'll do my best. That.
You know, and you've just juggled so much in your lifetime. And one of the things that I am constantly impressed with by you is your ability to like have fun and do like outdoor stuff and, you know, redo a home, or, you know, you just have this beautiful home that you built, and it's just, you just get in there and do stuff. You know, you're not a stand by and watch, you're get in and do. And you have an incredible balance between work and life. Even though you've accomplished so much, you still have as much commitment to kind of family and fun as you do to work. So what kind of advice can you give to women who are struggling with that? I'm a woman struggling with that right now. You know, I'm super challenged by that. I feel like I either have a work hat on or a home hat on, and I work at home. So that's kind of, it's very psychotic sometimes. But what kind of, Francis always tries to get me to do exercise and stuff, and I probably should, but what kind of balancing activities do you have for?
Yeah, this is an area that I've mentored a lot of women over the years. And the first thing that we all have to realize is that we are ourselves. And so we have just 100% of our time. It's not 150%, because that doesn't exist. And so when you really begin to kind of unpack this concept of self-care, the first thing I would say is that we need to make sure that we know and love ourselves. So often we haven't spent enough time actually really getting to know who we are as actual people and really like loving who we are and loving what we could become. And so self-care really starts with making sure that you really look at yourself, understand who you are. And part of that is actually putting word maybe to what you feel. Like, so for example, what are your values? What are the things that bring you joy and energy? What are the things that you find, you know, tremendous meaning in or passion in? A lot of those kinds of questions really lend themselves to this self-discovery, so you can really begin to put word to what those things are. Once you have that kind of nailed down, then you have to step into your life and you have to realize that your work life, your professional life, and your personal life, it is your life. And so, you know, the big problem that we all have is that we set our priorities for work, and there's usually too many. And then we set our priorities for our home life, and there's usually too many. And so then when you put them together, it adds up to about 500%. And so then we spend our time trying to meet all of those priorities and failing at absolutely all of them or some of them. And then we feel bad, right? My advice is get your priorities, write them down on one list and prioritize them, this blended list of work and life, and do it with your life partners, you know, whoever those people are in your world, and understand what theirs are as well, because now you can have harmony in where and how that you live, and then prioritize them, like spend the time. And then you can really figure out then I can do this kind of stuff at work. I can do these kinds of things at home because I'm working against a prioritized list of priorities in my whole life. And then the other thing I would say is check in with yourself and check in with your life partners every 6 months. And when you do that, you can just always kind of step back and say, am I on track or not? I've done this for years. Frankly, I don't write anything down. I've written a few things down, but I don't like have this big business plan about myself or anything like that. You know, it's just kind of more like, hey, look, let me just really get nailed down, like what I think the top 3 or 4 priorities are. And then everything else is just gravy on top if I can do it. And then let me check in with myself and just make sure that I'm on track. And I just find this cadence of 6 months seems to work.
Yeah, well, definitely a good homework list for each and every one of us. Or as one of my mentors used to say, don't call it homework, call it home play. And then you just might attend to that list. You know, that's so powerful. I love this, like, step into your life. And Keisha, you mentioned exercise. So I'm going to remind you of one of my favorite quotes. It said, belief is an attitudinal muscle. It must be exercised. And Margot, you've given us lots of examples of that with joy and energy and purpose and meaning. And I hope that everybody just kind of rewinds this part of the podcast and keeps listening to it every single day, almost like a daily mantra of what we need to do for ourselves. And then we check in with one another, as you said, in 6 months. Such powerful advice. You know, you mentioned you like fun. So we have a little game of insights and some fun perhaps for you next. And that is with a little game we play where we ask you some pretty powerful questions, but we're going to ask you just to finish the sentence for us. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So here's the first one. An event that changed my worldview.
Well, I already talked about Kenya, so I'll give you a different one. And it was in the 1990s when I went down into downtown Detroit, literally downtown, in a very highly impoverished area. And I went to this children's center, and this children's center was bright and welcoming, and the teachers were unbelievable. And it became one of these like factors for me that says, even in the bleakest of circumstances, we can bring light and potential and add into somebody's life.
That is amazing. And it's true. You can have light anywhere, right?
Yep.
I became a stronger person after.
Yeah, that's a good one. After I failed. And I never used to even like to admit that I fail, because I was like, oh, that's a learning experience. Wait, which is right. True. But sometimes that term failure actually brings with it a sense of humility. And sometimes in our careers, we actually need to acknowledge that we've failed in order to reground ourselves just in this sense of humility that we are really lifelong learners. And there really is something that you can take out of that. And when you take something, the thing that you learn out of that failure, that then now, from my perspective, adds to the strength of your foundation in your professional career and your personal life.
So true. So true. How about this one? The final one. My life improved when I...
When I decided to live my life, you know, as opposed to maybe somebody else's life. And so for me, that it means a few things. One is to really immerse yourself into something greater than yourself. You know, that's given me so much joy. It's been so remarkable. But then at the same time, we all tend to want to judge, oh, this person is doing something big. I could never do anything that big. And I just will tell you that when you're giving and when you want to, at your core, really make a difference and help people, nothing you do is too small or insignificant. It could be just a smile. And that smile could actually elicit something inside of somebody else who's really struggling that day, you know, maybe with self-esteem, that you may not ever know. Nothing that you do is too small and insignificant if you're minded to actually really help someone and bring light into somebody else's day. Here's the thing that I've also found as a woman, maybe men too, but I'll tell you what, at least for myself, fear is our greatest enemy. It just is. I can't do that because I'm not good enough because there's no way that this will happen because I'm so blah, blah, blah. I'm afraid. Fear is your greatest enemy. But when you really take a look at it, the human emotion that is the most powerful human emotion is love. And love always conquers fear. And so let love guide you. So if you're fearful about something, find out why. And then can you actually say, gosh, if I loved this that much, what would I do? So don't allow fear to hold yourself back. And then just like we were talking about before with this whole concept of common unity, community, you know, or common union, involve others, because oftentimes there are people that really want to make a difference too, but they just don't know how. And so if you invite them in, if they choose to come in, you have now given them a gift that you probably don't even know how great that gift actually is.
Oh gosh, that's such a beautiful sentiment. And you exemplify that. I mean, you live that every day. And it's just such a joy to watch your life unfold over the years and to see the work, as you said, that God has put into play through you. I just can't thank you enough for saying yes to us and being part of our podcast and sharing your journey and your words of wisdom and encouragement with all of our listeners. You know, what I've learned from you today is that retirement can be better than anything leading up to it if you put your passion and faith first. Hey, Frances, what have you learned from Margo today?
Well, I know she was mentioning the heart bursting open. And I love that visualization, because when your heart breaks open so much joy, you can see all the love that's in there and scatter it everywhere. And in fact, you marked that we need to know and love ourselves and love who we could become. And by doing that and radiating that love with abundance, we really find the core of our purpose. And, you know, you mentioned this mentor, this executive coach earlier, and we always leave our listeners with a coaching question. And as I was reading your bio and your background, you said something that really connected not only this whole conversation, but really to summarize through this next coaching question. And so I'm going to leave you with this and our listeners with this. And this is, how might you immerse yourself in something greater than you? Again, how might you immerse yourself in something greater than you?
That's a big coaching question, Frances. That's going to take our listeners a little while to think about. But if they listen to this podcast, they will be inspired to really challenge themselves with that. You know, Margo, I can't thank you enough for being with us today, spending a little bit of your time with us, sharing your incredible, incredible journey.
Well, thank you so much. It's just been a delight and an honor. And I hope that it helps your listeners in some way.
I feel inspired already, and I know it's helped me. And, you know, we want all of our listeners to know how much we appreciate you as our listeners and appreciate the message that Margo has journeyed with us through today's podcast experience. You know, you invite all of our fierce listeners to identify with their own personal message of finding their voice and how they're going to use that to inspire others.
It's true. And with Frances's coaching question, they can also share their kind of higher purpose on Twitter with our hashtag TL Honor Role, R-O-L-E. So until then, we want you to make sure that you join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight another Shero in education. And we ask you to be fierce and formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Francis Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at hashtag TL Honor Roll. That's TL Honor, R-O-L-E.